You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Series, what were you thinking?
Well, inherently a prequel series does have to end because at some point you're going to start overlapping.
Yes.
Well, I just didn't want it to end, Richard. It's been so good.
With like Planet of the Apes Rogue One, where it's literally like, oh, what's that in the sky?
But I am at the point now that I think Matt Reeves has done such a great job with these last two films. If they were like, we're going to go ahead and continuing on with the continuity from this series, go ahead and remake Planet of the Apes. As long as Matt Reeves and this company was doing it, I'd be like, do it.
Yep.
I'll fucking watch it.
Yep.
Be happy. Because we're talking about War for the Planet of the Apes, the third of the prequel series. That brings it to a close somewhat neatly into
somewhat
the original canon. I mean, it's the first of the films that really is just dropping reference bombs left and right.
Yeah. No, this one is definitely harkening back to the original franchise in a way that they have never harkened before.
Indeed.
And in a lot of ways, I think all the better for it.
Mm.
I mean, I think the first one tried a little too hard and was... For a film that was so emotionally cold and tried to be so emotionally manipulative at the same time, it was a weird failure.
Mm-hmm.
I think it redressed a lot of that in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
But this really does feel like, okay, it's got to be character-driven first. Which is weird because you go, what for the Planet of the Apes? It's just going to be all-out mass combat. No, wrong, suckers.
This is a bait and switch.
It is a war movie to an extent.
It's the aftermath of a war.
Oh, no. It's a war movie, but it's a combination of a man on a mission behind enemy lines movie and
The POW, Great Escape.
And a POW movie.
Yeah.
Well, it's
and a little bit of The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah.
It's there.
Yeah.
Because Caesar is definitely a Christ figure here. And if you didn't know that from the first two films, they make sure you know it in this one. I mean, the guy is literally, like, crucified at one point.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mean, like, the way Christ was with dying and all.
Those X crucifixes were just a shout-out to the original franchise.
The story here, 2 years after Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Caesar and his apes, Caesar once again played brilliantly by Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
Man, I mean...
Andy Serkis and the remarkable team of technicians at Weta who are dedicated to just making sure that you can translate Andy Serkis' performances digitally.
Yeah. And it's so dead on, it's worthy of a acting nomination. It really is. They might have to give it to 35 people.
They are really... Serkis is causing, I think, ructions in what point they have to say the performance is this.
This is one of the strongest performances I've seen this year, and it's from a CG ape over skin over Andy Serkis. He's the main character of the first two, and now he and his apes are in the mountains with the forests, and the humans are coming at them, being led eventually, as we see by what's his face,
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
Who has clearly watched Reign of Fire recently?
Yeah, seriously.
Which he really shouldn't have.
No one should.
He's basically doing his best translation of Colonel Kurtz.
Caesar is still haunted by the events of the last movie. And what was the name of the ape? Was it Kubo or something like that? Who had turned on him and how much
Kubo
that...
Kubo's got two strings.
How much that betrayal just cut him to his core. And that fear, as the movie goes along, am I not just doing what he would have done? Am I not reacting how he would have reacted?
Yeah.
As things become incredibly personal between him and Woody Harrelson, who him and the humans are carrying out guerrilla moves against the apes and doing some pretty, pretty low shit.
Yeah, well, you're questioning at this point how much of anybody is left, because there were never that many of the apes to begin with. And humanity is pretty much on its last stand.
Yeah, as we've seen, the virus that killed most of humanity has now evolved and is making them revert to where they don't have speech and they're much more simplified in their forms of thought.
Which is one of the nice things that's happening is this point. This is the point where humanity and the apes are crossing, because while Caesar is the only one that can speak, the rest of them can sign. And it's interesting the way that they
the rest of them can communicate.
Yeah, well, yes. they all speak ASL, and some of them are better than others.
Yeah, Maurice, the orangutan from the previous ones. I mean, if he really pushes it, he can talk, yeah. But he's obviously not crazy about it.
Not comfortable with it, but you know, his sentence structure is much more refined.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some of the gorillas, they're not quite there. It's like it's noun verb now.
Whereas Caesar looks like he could literally go and perform Julius Caesar at any moment. He is so good at this point of speaking. He's better, more verbose than Woody Harrelson is.
Yeah,
you know.
What they really pull off here that's quite remarkable is at one point they actually pick up an adorable blonde human Moppet Munchkin.
Yeah.
And it works. It shouldn't at any level.
You should groan just hearing that. For fuck's sakes, is an adorable little girl. But it's kind of essential to the moral structure of the story of what's going on and what's being discussed and Caesar's own journey. And then, of course, essential to the film that, you know, came out in the 1960s.
Yeah, I mean, there's one point where I think they do actually make a little bit of a blunder on that for tonally, which I think they were like, we can get away with a small kid. We can get away with anything. Steve Zahn as Bad Ape, who is the only other chimp that is the other talking chimp,
mm-hmm.
Who turns up and he's a little bit too obviously comic relief in places. He's basically the Ben Gunn character who turns up and is extremely useful. But I think Zahn does the best he can with it.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit of a holy fool character that doesn't work within the rest of the environment of this film.
I will say I felt that way at first, but as it went along and it gets so much darker, and boy, this film gets so fucking dark, I felt he was so necessary.
Yeah, but I think they just got it a little bit wrong on tone. There are a couple of things that only work and are essential for the film to move forward, but they only happen because he accidentally treads on something. Or falls, or literally at one point falls into something. I'm like, dude, no, that's too obvious. And that just, it felt like it undercut everything else they'd achieved to a certain degree. I mean, not fatally, but I was like, he's a little bit too much. I think you could have geared him back a little bit.
This film is strange that it kind of only has 2.5 acts, really, in terms of structure. You've got kind of the half act is like, yeah, they're in the woods and they're fighting off the humans. And then there's the Caesar and his friends going on a road trip to go and try and like get revenge. And then there's the giant prison escape movie, which is really the bulk of the film.
Yeah. Well, the problem then is that act actually, I feel is almost two acts
mm-hmm.
in its own right. And if there is a problem with this film, it is that at almost 2:30. I mean, it does
142 minutes.
It does not need to be, and the problem is that first half of the third act, which is laggy. I was watching it and go like, how did nobody in the edit go, you know what, we need to lose 10 minutes of this, and you can lose 10 minutes without shedding a single
If they had done that, we might have had to endure yet another nearly half-hour speech by Woody Harrelson explaining his motivation.
No, that's what, because they were going to lost a lot of those.
You guys really hated Woody Harrelson in this, huh?
Woody Harrelson, I think they overwrote the part, and Woody will always perform to the limits of a part, and I think if you give him something huge, he's going to turn it into a distended hot air balloon. If, you know, they should, knowing what the actor they had, Matt Reeves could have gone, no, we need to pull this back to
I like Harrelson all right, but yeah, he's very obviously a Colonel Kurtz. He's become unhinged, and he's even alienated the remainder of the armed forces, and he's just kind of leading a cadre of true believers at this point. But yeah, he comes off, you know, it's just like, I know the intention was to portray him as glassy-eyed in his mania, but he comes off as an idiot more often than not. There's a lot of points where you're just like, I know that the character's supposed to be irrational, but even the most irrational of people would realize that, yeah, this is a bad idea. You're not doing a very good job of running a prison camp, for one thing.
Although, to be fair, I think there was a lot of portraying the military as kind of buffoons. Outside of the first sequence, because there is a moment where you watch what a large armed force does, and you go, literally, no armed force has done that since the charge of the Light Brigade,
right.
Morons. Well, why are you doing that?
But let's not forget that these were probably not mainly originally military men. This virus has decimated like 90% of the population. Most of these people were probably like taxicab drivers and what have you.
This is 15 years later, so all of those soldiers would have been like teenagers or less mm-hmm. when everything happened. If they had sold it that way, it's just like, oh, well, this isn't the military. These are glassy-eyed last holdouts. That would have worked way better.
But we don't ever get to know enough of them to decide, like, how.
That's a good point. You have this character named Preacher who, you know, throughout the whole movie, they are dropping these hints as to he's going to come to some, you know, major realization or, you know, dynamic change of state. And the only dynamic change of state he has is, spoiler alert, it's blown up.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wait, that's why we did all this shit with him in the back? Like, if you're going to give me some backstory from somebody, at least give me somebody who survived.
Yeah, if there's a problem with this movie, it's really there is that big imbalance with Matt Reeves just doesn't seem to give a shit about the humans that much. They're a mechanic to get Caesar in his journey where he needs to go. They're kind of a mustache twirly villain in their own way that are taken, like so many things from this movie, as tropes and very recognizable ones from other very famous war movies, whether it's The Dirty Dozen or The Great Escape, you know, what have, or Apocalypse Now. All of these things are put in such stark relief, they're almost all but impossible to miss how deeply this film is taking from them. And yet, Caesar, his performance, his journey as a character across these films, and where he is here is enough that those things just didn't really stick in my crawl that much. Much like Reeves, I'm really only focused on Caesar watching this movie. He's a fascinating character, and emotionally his journey here is all over the place in a fascinating way. A lesser actor wouldn't have made it work, but Serkis.
I loved his performance. It's amazing. All that stuff that you said. Sure, I wish they had served him better by giving him better set dressing. If they were gonna treat the humans like that, then it would have been better for me, as far as I'm concerned, to not even get to know any of them at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it would have kind of been cool to have them be faceless villains,
or maybe have it where they've all got the thing where they can't talk.
Yeah, no, that'd be even cooler. Watching them devolve would be really interesting, but yeah, like once again, watching a 15-minute speech by Woody Harrelson of, you know, why he is somehow different than Gary Oldman was not making this movie for
me. Which is what's remarkable about that is that much of this film is either dialogue free or subtitled because it's the apes communicating in ASL, and those scenes really work. So whenever then suddenly you've got these, you know. It's exacerbated.
Now I'm going to warm up some soup and tell you a story.
It exacerbates the problem there because you've gone so long going, I don't need to hear something. And then suddenly you've got, any time somebody speaks, it's shocking.
Yeah.
You know, every time Caesar opens his mouth, it's a shocking moment. And then, you know, the first time you see people around, it's like, it's shocking because they're speaking again. And then it just becomes background drone as you're like hour 15 of Woody Harrelson explaining why he doesn't like soup. As you pointed out, or some obscure thing that happened. You're like, oh, I really don't care about your metaphor, sir. I don't know. That is a structural problem, but everything else about this film kind of loops over that and kind of like, you know, we know we got this problem here, but this is so successful at every other level that you kind of miss those things.
Let's point out once again, the CG, I mean, we've said it with all three movies, but the CG on these apes is about as good as CG work gets.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, I can't think of an example that's better with creating.
No, you absolutely forget the CG. You're like, oh, where'd you get the giant orangutan? Because he was great.
There are plenty of moments where I'm looking at it like in extreme close-ups and going, I cannot tell that CG.
Yeah.
You know, with these characters being very expressive. And you're like, yeah, that looks 100% real to me. It's fascinating, and I can only imagine how much and how long that process was. Holy shit. Well, let's go into final thoughts. Richard, why don't you start us out?
By far the most successful of the three for me. I mean, it's flawed. It's imperfect. The pacing is problematic. The characterization of the humans is problematic. But at the same time, while this was an, I mean, let's be honest, this was an IP that everybody went, they're bringing back Planet of the Apes, this is doomed.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, it's been an extremely successful, commercially and artistically, franchise. It is mature. Characters die, and there is an emotional weight to them as long as they're apes.
Yeah, because nobody cares about the humans.
Yeah, yes. Really, it's like, so,
sorry, Gabriel Chavarria, have fun in your next movie.
I mean, if James Franco showed up and suddenly died, I would have been like, aw.
Yeah.
Well, we liked him in the first movie, but.
Yeah, you know. James Franco, he's kind of weird.
I want that to be my new text message now. Yeah, I'm going to record that. James Franco is weird. Oh, Richard's calling.
His brother's Dave's lovely. I'd be upset if Dave died on film, but James, I'm like, eh. But no, this is...
I wouldn't, because then Alison Brie was single.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
And after watching the first episode of Glow...
Oh, my God.
Anyway, sorry.
Betty Gilpin. This is, you know, the ending that this franchise has built up to and deserves. And I think if somebody can give Matt Reeves a script that gets rid of the issues that he had here, I would really be happy to see him continue on and build this franchise and go forward without making all the internally contradictory problems that you had with the actual original franchise, particularly once they start time traveling.
They were always time traveling. It was Earth all along.
Whoop, whoop, whoop. This is a solid 7.5 out of 10 flung monkey poos.
Bo?
Well, this is Return of the Jedi, capstone of the trilogy for me, which is to say, didn't hate it, but will probably not be revisiting as much as I revisit the other two in the trilogy. I did have a lot of problems with this. I thought it was flawed. I did not like, you know, the apes were, everything with the apes was great, solid, more or less. I had some problems with inherent plot holes in the whole prison escape bit.
Not the plot holes so much as implausibility.
Implausibilities, yes. That's a better way to put it. I wish they had found a more gripping character than Woody Harrelson's character to lead the humans in this, because it really needs something like that. You know, as great as Caesar is, he doesn't really have a foil, because whenever he's on screen with Woody Harrelson, it literally is the monkey and the tiger, and unfortunately Woody Harrelson is the monkey. I really like this franchise. I'm glad it didn't facepalm at the end. It stumbled a little on its last legs, and that's sad. I would have to give it 7.5 helicopters. Oh my God, we have helicopters? Why weren't we using the helicopters before?
Well, they didn't technically have helicopters, to be fair. It was the other
army guys did. You know, they could have, I don't know, flown them down
and
killed monkeys with it.
They weren't in the same... Did you fall asleep at some point in the
movie?
They
weren't in the same what?
They weren't, like, the guy was, like, his army was separate.
Well, yes, I know, but that wasn't always the case.
But what, during the length of this movie, it was.
And who's making...
Yeah, I know. We are talking about three whole different movies, right?
Right.
And the beginning of this movie, it sets up the fact that there was a war between humans.
Well, helicopters aren't all that great in the woods.
Okay.
I mean, just say, they're not as good.
You keep on thinking that.
I'm pretty sure that's factually obvious, Bo.
All right.
You can't fly down. You can barely see what's going on through the trees.
Have you got your final thought?
Yeah. My final thought is shut the hell up, Bo. You're looking for plot holes where there aren't any.
No, he has actually got a good point.
I'm sorry.
I have an excellent point.
I don't agree.
Get on with that monkey after you.
I think that this was a really great movie. I think all three of these are really great movies. I think they're tonally all completely different from each other. But they are held together so strongly by the effects. Andy Serkis as Caesar. And you know, at least I forget who directed the first one. Do you remember?
James Franco.
It was not James Franco. It would have been a very different movie if it was James Franco. So with Seth Rogen as Caesar. And the Woody Harrelson thing, I think he's a poorly written character, but I enjoyed his performance of it. I thought his over-the-topness was pretty funny to watch. I know I wasn't supposed to be laughing, but I was laughing and having a good time with it anyway. I thought it was fun. But I agree, he's a very poorly written character, and he's way too Colonel Kurtz. Like, it's so on the nose, it's ridiculous. But the apes are great. I'm going to keep doing this back and forth, but the apes are great.
How many apes do you give it?
I give it 8 out of 10 great apes. Great ape. Out of curiosity, if they were to go on with Matt Reeves in the same context and make a remake of Planet of the Apes, who would you cast as the astronaut?
Oh, James Franco, of course.
No, he's already been in the films.
That's never stopped James Franco before, and it never will.
James Franco, just put a mustache on.
James Franco turns up and is wildly inappropriate with monkeys and apes generally, and they're all like, no, we're just going to kill you because you're creeping us out, you know.
Did you just kiss that monkey? No. What was the thank you?
It would be nice to find.
Did you just kiss that gecko? Thank you.
Is there an actor out there who can put in the same world weary performance as Heston? Because that would be awesome.
I don't know.
Yeah. Michael Chiklis.
Michael Chiklis is an interesting choice. Yeah. Look at Scoot McNairy.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Scoot McNairy actually might be real good. Yeah. It's his time. It's his shot for the A-list role.
Yeah, about time.
Yeah.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Club, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.